sky is so starless. Baby, the sky is so starless. Baby, you got me growing heartless. So heartless, girl, it's starless. Starless, yeah.
What's up, what's up, what's up? Welcome back to the Red Light Special. We are back for another episode. Before we start, I'd like to shout out Jeff Sledge, the homie. He was here for the last episode. Like, I was just listening back to it, and we went for almost like 2 hours. Like, I mean, this man talked to us about working with R. Kelly, Aaliyah, Chris Brown, T-Pain. Like, when you imagine just having that as your resume as an A&R in the game and all those stories, we might have to have Jeff back for part two, because I feel like he got too many stories and he's been holding back. But shout out to the homie Jeff. I also want to shout out the homies Jake and Papa for our intro song. What you just heard is Starless. All right, you know, that's our theme song now. I know Jake and Pop blowing up, but y'all can't have it back. That's ours. We gonna hold it down. And I got to shout out This Is R&B and Jamie over at This Is R&B for the continued support. Also this week, man, I just came back. I was in SOBs for Joe Budden. I'll name this podcast later, with Maritza and Rory. You know, Joe Budden always has us on the podcast, always reps for the Red Light Special. So those guys sold out SOBs in New York City for a podcast. Like, people were just standing there to hear Joe Budden talk. He wasn't rapping. He didn't spit a verse. It was amazing. So shout out to those guys. And if you're wondering why you just hear my voice, Kristen, she got stuck in traffic. She is on the way. But we have a very special episode, so we just couldn't wait. I'm going to get right into it. This week's guest is an enigma. Back in 2011, the trio comes out of nowhere and dropped their debut EP, The Story. The project was just three tracks long, but it was enough to earn them praise from Questlove, Erykah Badu, and the Purple One himself. Nah, not Future. I'm talking about Prince. Yeah. Kendrick Lamar even sampled their track Hey on Chapter 6 from his Section 80 album. And now Anita, Amber, and Paris, they're back for the first time with their debut album, We Are King. So I'd like to welcome to the Red Light Special, King. And there we go. We should get an applause track. I'm going to clap it up for you guys. But first of all, welcome to New York.
Thank you.
And welcome to the Red Light Special. Just real quick, let's go around, because I want the listeners to get acclimated to hearing your voices. So let's do a introduction real quick, one by one. You want to start with Paris? Let's start with Paris.
I am Paris.
Oh, Paris. I'm sorry.
I am Paris.
Okay.
I'm Anita.
Anita.
And I'm Amber.
And Amber. Okay. So we're here. We Are King. The new album. It's been a long time coming. I mean, The Story. Let's go back to The Story.
Mm-hmm.
You guys dropped that, and it felt like this reaction. Like, it sent like a shockwave. Like, did you expect that? Was that planned? Because it kind of feels like in this day and age when everybody's trying to do a little bit of mystery, and you guys were mysterious. Like, was this a plan? Like, yo, we're going to drop this little EP. We're going to drop them crazy. And then we're going to come back on them a few years later and really kick the door down.
No, that wasn't. That wasn't exactly planned that way. You know, we had just initially made the EP and wanted to kind of create a piece of art for our family and friends to enjoy. So we put it up on the internet, and the rest is history. But it was really crazy, the response that we got almost immediately after putting it up.
That's crazy. But how did that happen? So did you have a manager? Was there, like, how did this happen?
At the time, we didn't have a manager. We didn't have PR. We didn't have anything. It was just the three of us. So
right.
We made the music. We handmade a construction paper, like stop animation music video to go with the story. And around the same time, we dropped the 3-song EP. I think we put it up on iTunes and Amazon.
Right.
But yeah, we didn't have any real plans. We didn't have any management or anyone telling us how to do it. We just kind of simply put it out into the universe.
So what was the first... You put it out there and it's out there. It's kind of for your family and friends. But what was the first inclination, like, nah, this is something bigger?
That was the first night, right? Because we had released it, and then like... We released it maybe like in the afternoon of, what was that, March 1st?
Yeah.
2011 at 12 midnight. We were out like celebrating, like, oh, you know, like our cousins will love this, whatever. And then we see Twitter with Questlove being like, wait a minute.
Yeah,
it's always, isn't it always Questlove? I feel like it's always Questlove. Yeah. He said Fonte as well?
Yeah, yeah. Definitely.
Little brother, definitely. Man. Shout out to Fonte.
Oh, yeah. He's been a great friend since day one.
Did you know Questlove before this?
Nah.
You didn't know Questlove?
No.
You didn't know Fonte?
No. That was our introduction to a lot of people and a lot of good friends to this day.
I have a friend, another journalist, shout out JFK, who used to be at Vibe. He's over at Genius. And he was like, he said Erykah Badu hit him.
Wow.
About y'all. And then he put me on. So I feel like I kind of learned. I feel like Erykah Badu might have hit me too. I don't know Erykah. I never met Erykah. But, you know, they have whatever professional relationships. And she put him on.
Wow. That's incredible.
And it's really like that each one teach. It's really like the way that music, or kind of like the old school, like how just a good song spread, right? Was just like word of mouth. Like, I'm a fan. I'm going to make him a fan. I'm going to make her a fan. And
yeah, that was a cool thing about it. I mean, and even since 2011, watching all the people that have come into our world through social media, everyone begins to feel like family, and it begins to feel like something that everyone is growing together and watching together. So it's really a cool experience where, you know, you're experiencing it in real time, you know.
That's now, you know, we're here now. It's five years later. And here comes the album. Was there a pressure on you guys to release something? Or did you know that you could slow cook it because you had something? Like,
we wanted to really take our time with it. You know, we felt the need to, you know, we always knew we were working on the album. So like with even the EP was, when we were making it, we had considered it to be, you know, small part of something bigger. The album wasn't done, but we knew that there was an album to go with it. So to that effect, there kind of was pressure and there wasn't pressure. It's just like, we know it's coming, you know, there wasn't a specific timeline set, but I think that within ourselves, we kind of kept reassuring each other. I remember, you know, maybe even feeling some pressure. And I remember telling Anita, like, oh, we got to put something out. And she was like, I think these songs are going to last a while. Like, you know.
You know the discipline that takes? I mean, well, obviously, you do, like, because, I mean, me, I'd be like, nah, like, Prince just hit us up. I'm finna drop something right now. Nah, you can't tell me to wait. You know what I mean? Like, I commend you for the discipline that it takes and the confidence in your music to know that, you know, this isn't fast food.
Yeah.
This is something that, you know, so what, you might have to wait 4 or 5 years from it, but you're going to still be listening to it, God willing, for another 4, 5, 15, 20 years.
Yeah. There was something really special about the way people caught on to the EP and kind of knowing how those songs were made and the kind of time and attention we put into those initial 3 songs. We didn't want to make anything that came after that anything less.
Right.
So we wanted everything, and we still want everything that we ever come out with to have that same attention.
Now, how did you all meet? Because you guys are sisters.
Twins.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How did you all meet?
I met Anita at Berklee College of Music really briefly. Just crossed paths for a hot second. I was running a rehearsal, I think, and she was one of the background singers. I heard her sing for maybe 5 seconds, and I was completely blown away. It's like, oh my God, everyone stop. And I like made her sing by herself. And then
she actually did that.
It's a real story. Like, I was a senior and she was a freshman. I was kind of on that day, I was kind of partying and I was just like, okay, let me just go do this rehearsal, whatever. And I got there and I was like, wait a minute. Like, I heard something out of all the singers singing together that I was like, wait, one of you guys is really killing. Hold on. With all due respect to everyone else who was there. I was like, oh man, she's great. And so I graduated. She actually ended up moving back to LA. And I, you know, almost forgot about that day until I ran into her at a jam session in LA. And she just was like, hey, do you remember me? And I was like, oh my gosh, you're that girl.
Right.
So we started hanging out as friends, and kind of the rest is history.
That's dope. So what role do each of you play in the group? Who does the production?
Probably me.
Okay. That's Paris that does the production.
Mm-hmm.
and then you two sing and songwrite? Do you songwrite together? Like, walk me through the collaboration process of like how a King song comes together.
All three of us are songwriters, but Anita and I are the vocalist.
Yeah.
Paris does a lot of the vocal arrangements and arrangements in general, but I mean, it's really collaborative. Like, we work together as a team. I think that's where the magic comes, where the three of us are in the studio most of the times together. Paris is always working on production, so that's like a 24-hour thing for her, like constantly. But, you know, when we are together, it's usually the three of us really kind of joining forces. And,
okay.
But it's a, you know, definitely a collaboration.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the name King, because it, I mean, it's a commanding name. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, you're never going to forget it. And I feel like it means something. Like, you guys could have named yourselves anything and you named yourselves King. How'd you come upon the name King? How did you know, like, this is going to be us? This is going to be our stamp?
Actually, that was the first and only name that we came up with. True story.
Yeah, that was Paris.
Yeah.
She called us and was like, what do you think of the name King?
And we're like, sure. Okay. But I think over time, it just kind of defined itself, like just how we are making our own music, making all the decisions when it comes to, you know, our creativity and how we put everything out and just being in charge of ourselves and what we do.
Right. That's amazing. Like, I love that. Like, I mean, it's just so striking. Like, it was like, you know, when I got put on, it was like, yeah, there's this new group named King. And I was like, all right, well, yeah, man, it's three females and like they killing it. And then when you turn it on, you're like, I mean, it just makes sense. It feels like everything is so well laid and put together. Who were your guys' influences? Because again, it doesn't sound like you're very much care about what's going on right now or that you're trying to fit in for right now.
Yeah.
Like, who were some of the influences that made you want to get into music and helped you develop this sound?
I'd say one of my main influences is Stevie Wonder.
Mm.
You know, just kind of how he changed the course of music in every decade that he put out an album. It was like always introducing something new, always kind of changing the pace of everything. Really into just great storytellers, great songwriters. Really loves like Steely Dan and Joni Mitchell and just like, it was just a super wide range. I kind of came from studying jazz, so like Bill Evans and a lot of Duke Ellington and then Herbie Hancock and George Duke. And, you know, just it was a ton of music. So I think a lot of it is kind of based in stuff that we heard growing up and stuff from the past, but also looking forward to kind of doing something completely original and wanting to create something new.
Right. And it does sound like that. Any other influences, Amber, Anita?
I mean, Quincy Jones, Teddy Riley,
right.
Michael Jackson.
Babyface.
Mm-hmm.
Babyface is amazing. You know, I have this, I think it's funny that you mentioned Teddy Riley, and the listeners know this because I go crazy every time somebody mentions Teddy Riley. I think Teddy Riley is one of the most underrated.
Completely, completely.
Producers. First of all, I mean, dude commanded a whole subgenre, like New Jack Swing. Like, they had to make a whole nother section.
Exactly.
For what he was doing.
Right. That's, I mean, it's what he did was so powerful. And I feel like, you know, the Teddy Riley sound, like you said, created something. And like, even like sometimes people will talk to us like, oh, you know, everybody's going to be like copying that sound or whatever. And it makes you, looking at his career, it makes you really embrace the idea of inspiring people to create something, maybe under something that you might have, you know,
right.
Start. I don't want to say started, but, you know, people are inspired by you. What he did was such a beautiful movement that really strung. You can't talk about the 90s really without talking about him
at all. Like, and it definitely comes from somewhere. Like, he didn't pull it out of the air. I mean, I've had debates with people on Twitter and people talk about the origins of New Jack Swing and where it came from. Like, for me, I hear a lot of like influences from like Minneapolis Funk and what Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis were doing. And then so it kind of morphs and becomes this thing. But when Teddy definitely got a hold of it, he made it his own. And I feel like from 88, maybe 89 to like 90, up until 93, like if you was a R&B act or rhythm and blues or soul act and you ain't have one from Teddy Riley or one that sounded like what Teddy Riley is doing.
Right.
what was you doing?
You even think about the Winans gospel.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like everybody. So, I mean, he's amazing.
Yeah.
Right. And then, of course, Quincy. Oh, man. So, y'all influences is lined up. And it's cool to be able to sit here and be like, I'm influenced by Teddy Riley or Quincy Jones or Duke Ellington and heavy jazz, but not necessarily sounding or emulating that sound or trying to, like, your sound is totally your own. How long did it take you to, and particularly you, Paris, to come up with a sound or maybe a sound bed that felt like this was King?
You know, it just feels like every single thing I've ever done in my life has kind of led up to being this sound.
Mm.
Everything I've ever studied, anything I've ever played. And it's really interesting because, yes, the production very much so sounds like us, but also when it's completely stripped and acoustic and it's just playing keys and singing, it also still sounds like us. So, it took, you know, I think it took some time to find our voice, but like once we found it, it was very much so ours.
Are there a lot of demos laying around where it's just like where you guys are trying to figure it out?
I think so. Yeah. There are quite a few demos.
There are a lot of demos, but it's so funny that particularly the three songs that were the story, that made the story, those were our kind of, that was our first effort together.
Right.
And that was before King. We made those songs as best friends.
Right.
But what's so interesting is that those tracks are really the same. They're in the same vein. So it's not like, you know, it's like live instruments and a drummer or anything like that. It's really in the, you know, in the blood of where we are right now. So I think that's a real interesting part of it too, where it wasn't like going through different phases of King before we came out.
Right. And that's why I think, like, in a lot of ways, We Are King kind of feels like the project that we've been waiting for, because you revisit those songs, like you revisit Supernatural and The Story and Hey, and we get like the long drawn out versions. Was that always the plan, or like you were like, oh, we're gonna come back to this, and or how did that happen?
Those are always part of the album,
right?
Like, and you know, I think that we even kind of entertained having them not be on the album, but like it just never gelled. It was never something that we thought about or considered, you know. It was always that those three songs were going to be a part of the album.
Right. Hey.
Oh, we're not playing it off.
Chris is here. Nah, why play it off? Like, you can't fool the people.
Hello. I told them, girls,
how you doing?
Kings.
Yeah.
Kings.
Yeah. So happy you guys are here.
This is Kristen. This is my co-host, who I do the Red Light Special with. So we were just talking about, you know, just about the EP and how having the presence of mind to have the three songs on the EP, but really draw them out for the album and really have this plan in place, is dope. It's so smart, because it just sounds like, as much as you guys are new artists and a new act, like, there's a familiarity to it.
Yeah.
Hey.
Mm-hmm.
Sampled by Kendrick Lamar.
Yeah, yeah.
My section daddy. I had to, man. That's the homie. How did that happen? Like, did he reach out? Did he know, like...
Just got a grin on her face.
There's a story here.
There's a story. You tell it.
I think just some people pointed it out to us. It's like, hey, Kendrick Lamar sampled you guys.
So you didn't know?
No.
Oh.
Yeah, but, we're interesting. Big fans of his.
Did he clear it?
Oh. You know, we met him.
He can start up some trouble, Rob.
He's a very nice guy.
Yeah, right. Amazing. Like, congratulations to him.
Oh, yeah, that album's
good. Oh, my God.
Right. Nah, it's an amazing album. Kendrick, I mean, I've known Kendrick for years, like, and been blessed to help document his career.
Oh, that's awesome.
Along the way. I think when I first met him, I was working at XXL Magazine, and we were shooting with J-Rock. So, you know, they all come in, you know, the entourage comes in, and they kind of introduced me to Kendrick as, oh yeah, this is J-Rock's man. Like, but we just kind of hit it off, like, right there, and just became friends. And I seen the talent in him, and he stepped it away, document a little bit by a little bit, and see where it is now.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
He's incredible and such a nice guy too. Really.
Right.
Yeah.
What was that like? Were you upset that you would sample? Were you happy about it?
It was
do you wish you would have just reached out first and
Or is it like...
We'll just say it was a surprise.
Yeah. I mean, it turned out to be an amazing track, too. Right. So, you know, everything is everything. It's cool. Like, no anything. It's all love.
Right. But the next time somebody sample y'all, they're going to have to clear that. Listen, if y'all not going to say it, I'm going to say it. Man. The next time you're going to take a King sample, you go. Kendrick got one that was like the freebie, right? I don't know. I ain't speaking your bit. But next time you sample King, you're going to have to clear that sample.
He said it.
Somebody's got to say it.
I'm coming. We want all the publishing.
Have you guys thought about collaborating with
Can
any...
You hear?
No,
I hear
no
you.
Sound.
Does it sound in your headphones?
Let me see. Well, if it's still picking up, then
You're definitely picking up.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, we can hear you.
It's the two of us.
Unless this reaches and you want to.
Is both of you guys?
Mm-hmm. I can hear it.
You know what?
As long as it's okay.
That's digital.
All right.
They're all picking
Unless
up.
Unless you guys
We're
prefer
good.
Them, you want them. You could just pull this right over and you guys should. No,
this is fine. Okay.
I'm not gonna front like I have like. I'm more have technical difficulties all the time because I don't know what I'm doing. I'm just a talent. So what's the plan? You guys are independent now. We are King is independent album. Are you looking to stay independent? Do you want to take it to a major label? Like, where do you think you'll fit in?
You know, our minds are always open. We've always been kind of. It's never been a blanket statement like, oh, we'll never sign or oh, you know, we really want to sign. It's just. Whatever situation really works with what we're trying to do. And I think that even within situations are people. Like if there's a person at a label who really gets it, like it's a whole different conversation. As it stands now, the three of us get it and, you know, we're capable of putting out this album. And I think it's important for this album to have been something so us that we get to experience it like kind of untampered with, unchanged, you know, as ourselves.
Right. Well, I think also with so much time going by and people kind of like, where's King? You know, what are they doing? What are they up to? When are they putting out an EP, another album or something, you know? But does it ever get difficult? Because I know you guys handle like the entire music aspect of it and the business aspect of it as well. Does it ever get like too much of a heavy load to deal with it all by yourselves?
You know, so far it's been really cool because, I mean, what's been happening is, you know, all the situations, everything that we've been through, everything that we've learned from, it all kind of turns into like a bottom line of like, okay, this is what we want. This is what we don't want. And it makes decisions really easy because everything you say yes or no to kind of adds to your bottom line. It adds to your kind of mission statement of what you're down with and what you're not. So decisions have been really cool, especially because the three of us get along so well and we're all in one accord. I think that anybody that's kind of on this wavelength kind of sees it and gets it and, you know, so far it hasn't been like too crazy or out of our reach or anything.
Mm. The greatest. Mm-hmm. Can we talk about that music video?
Yes.
Because when I got Nintendo as a kid, it changed my life.
Yes, yes.
Very like video game inspired. Like I wasn't, you know, hearing the song, like I wasn't expecting, you don't expect that visual. But then when you see the visual, it makes so much sense. And it feels like that. Whose idea with that? How did y'all accomplish that? Because the video is amazing.
We're really, really into the visual aspect of music and of art. And I think that for this album, that's the first of a few curated animated music videos that we're working on for this album.
Mm-hmm.
And for that one, it was, you know, it's a song about Muhammad Ali. Mm-hmm. And for us, like when we think about boxing, we're serious Nintendo fans.
Like, wow.
Nice.
Like we still have all the old consoles. We have the 64, we have the Sega, we have the Super Nintendo and everything. And so, you know, in making all the songs on the album, we had this kind of visual stuff in mind. For that one, it just happened to be Punch Out. Couldn't get it out of my head. So we found this amazing company that, you know, kind of specialized in doing lots of different kind of media, and we saw that they'd done an 8-bit, some kind of business advertisement video or something. We're like, can we collaborate on this? So I kind of came up with a storyline, and I think that the song is kind of multi-layered.
Right.
You know, on one aspect, you have like, okay, we're talking about Nintendo, we're talking about like, you know, okay, Muhammad Ali, the greatest of all time. That in itself has another story because you're not just talking about Muhammad Ali, the athlete. Talking about him as kind of the person, the leader, political stance that he took and kind of the way that he invested back in the community and the statements he made with the power that he had at the time of being like world-class fighter, but I'm going to speak on the stuff that's affecting the people who aren't world-class writers right now. Mm-hmm. So it was that inspiration, but also, coming with the music video, we wanted to express, just greatness. Mm-hmm. It's a montage of people preparing, really working at it, training, getting ready for the big fight. Right. And the lyrics are about being completely confident in what you're doing. Right. And I think that in this day and age, especially for young people of color, it was really important for us to kind of have a song out where it's just like, no, I'm the greatest. It's okay to say it. It's okay to live it. You know, that takes work and it takes practice. And it's not just saying it to say it, but it's a really important thing to be able to have that faith in what you're doing. Mm-hmm. Where, you know, all this crazy stuff is going on in the world today. It was really important for us to be, for young people especially, to be able to see themselves in that and to have right. that confidence.
That's amazing. Like, I'm gonna go look at it again because I just like video games. I was like, but it works on so many levels. You have a beat punch out?
No.
I'm trying to figure it out, man. I could never beat Mike Tyson, man. I'm gonna ask y'all this. Are you big gamers or is it just Nintendo? Because there's a culture around Nintendo too that's almost on.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not gonna lie. I stopped at 64.
Okay. No. Final Fantasy and PlayStation.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
PlayStation
2. Yeah.
Yeah, that's fun.
That's where, that's where I stopped. I don't have that now, but Final Fantasy 8 was my ultimate jam. Oh my gosh.
All the music.
But 007, Star Fox. Obviously, Mario.
Right.
Just got into like the new Mario stuff on the Wii, which is also
awesome. You tried Mario Maker yet?
No.
Where you can make your own level? What? I have two kids. I have a 7-year-old and a 10-year-old. So I buy them games. Are they really for me? But I just let them play it.
The cover up.
Yeah, that but awesome. Mario Maker, like you can make, they give you all the tools and like you can build your own levels and then like then you'll challenge your friend to beat the level. So it's all about building an impossible level.
Wow. So right. Birthday's coming up.
That's what I'm saying. I know what to get you. Mario Kart.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Who wins in Mario Kart?
To be honest, and she doesn't play at all, and there's nothing more insulting than someone coming over your house and being like, I don't really play, and then kicking your ass. Oh my God. And then you try not to be mad.
I was like, we was at this fun, like this hits close to home. We were at we had a little party at the Genius office last week, and we broke out the Nintendo. We were playing Mario Kart, and I lost, and I'm such a sore loser. Like I had it, and dude just threw the red turtle at me, like right when I'm at the finish line, and I came and I was so tight.
You know what's so funny? Like I'm a sore loser. Anita wins like fair and square too, so I just kind of credit it to like her amazing driving skills. I mean, I've even like backed into her car before, so I'm probably not gonna win.
That was a bad day.
When you think you're in driving in reverse, she was standing right there.
That's happened to me. I just haven't crashed into anybody, but that's definitely happened to me.
I hate her cars.
Chris.
Well, it's me we're talking about.
It is you we're talking about. So Anita is the best in Mario Kart.
I mean, we played each other?
I'm the best. She holds the crown. Yeah.
Why are you trying to even protest? Like,
I think we should have a Mario Kart party.
Go back to LA and figure it out. Yeah, no.
Let us know. Just tweet us. Just be like,
we will.
I'll take a picture of the screen.
You need that.
Exactly.
Yeah, I want a rematch. I don't remember when we played, but we got to do it again.
Right. No alcohol this time.
No, this time. I think I'll be in LA in March, the end of March.
Ah,
yeah.
You play?
Not anymore, but I will. I might just come in and win, and like her, she's just, I don't play, but bam, they'll be.
She does Call of Duty. She's more into like.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, nice. None of you play Call of Duty?
I like to watch it.
You like to watch it?
It gives me severe anxiety.
Right. Yeah, I used to be like that. I used to just watch and gets me like my nerves worked up, but then I started playing and now I'm just like hooked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you play like Metal Gear Solid or anything like that?
No.
I do.
No. You play that?
Yeah.
But you don't play Call of Duty.
I have Call of Duty, the Black Ops 3. It's still in the plastic though. I'm just never home.
Jeez.
Like I buy and I'm straight out of Compton. Still in the plastic. Like
you're home enough to create your own levels and shit.
Yeah. That was like around Christmas break, so I had time. But back to you guys, because I feel like, one, I just want to commend you. I forgot who we were speaking to, who we had on here. But we were just kind of talking
Jeff
about
Sledge.
No, it wasn't Jeff. This was months ago when we were just talking about music. Nobody makes statement music anymore. Like, I mean, in the way that Marvin Gaye made music that spoke to society, it kind of feels like, and young people are going through the most right now, right?
Yeah.
And young people are active and young people are out there, but it doesn't feel like the music reflects that. Like, you know, I hate to sound like I'm not bitter or anything, but, you know, it's like there's more than just, you know, pop it, shake that ass,
right. Twerk.
You know, and it kind of feels like we have a lot of that and not enough balance on the other end with music that's just really saying something and to inspire and to really inspire this generation to be great, mm-hmm. and the greatest that they can be. So, like, it sounds like you go into the studio with that mission in mind. Is that...
Well, I mean, you know, I think as sisters and friends and best friends and music partners and business partners, the nice thing about it is that I don't think the three of us go into the studio ever thinking about one singular person or one singular emotion or like myself. Or So I think that naturally that just comes out where it's speaking for more than one person. But, you know, sometimes like, not that I turn on the radio or anything, but sometimes I am overwhelmed with this sense of me, I feel this way. And it may not even be like a negative song or like a, you know, a weird vibe in a song, but it's nice to just have something outside of myself or my ego or how I feel, where it's about my sisters.
Right.
And when people hear it, they might hear themselves in a little bit more because they connect, because I'm trying to connect with them or they're trying to connect with me or her. You know what I mean? Right.
Nah, that's dope. No, you're right. You know, I think, especially in hip hop and, you know, I also have this theory that I feel like hip hop rappers are using way more melody in their rhymes. And I feel like a lot of singers and vocalists in the R&B realm are using a lot more rap cadences when they sing, and everything is just kind of coming into the center where, you know, you have a lot of artists who are hybrids and who are great artists. Like, I'm a big Tory Lanez fan, you know, and sometimes he raps, sometimes he sings, and who cares? Mm-hmm. But it seems like there's less that exists outside of that circle musically. Like, you know, everything doesn't have to be a trap beat. And though I would love to hear you make a trap beat. Like, you probably got a mean stab of trap beat. Like, I'm not even gonna lie, Paris. Like, I feel like you might have one for future.
Hey, we'll see.
That would be so cool. Just like, I'm not gonna say right now. But. Right.
No, but that's the other thing. I think, and what I hope you'll find, I think you guys are gonna get like adoration from artists that you never expected, like people who like.
Really?
I think it would be like a Young Thug to be like, and you'd be like, what?
You know what I kind of like picture it as, like, and I know she gives you guys a lot of praise, Erykah Badu. Mm. So it's outside of anybody's kind of like sound. I feel she has like her very own unique sound. You guys similarly have your own unique sound, and you know, Rob was saying you guys seem like you have like a mission statement. I do feel like there's a lot of messages in your music. Like, it's more to it than just a melody or a hum or like a little, you know, there's a message behind everything. So even the Mr. Chameleon song, like I was on NPR and they're streaming the new album, and I listened
to NPR.
Yeah, they always have like the early streams for some of the best albums, but it's just funny to me that every song, whether it be something playful or something really deep, has a really great message behind it. And I wanted to ask you guys, actually, when you get praises from like somebody like Erykah Badu, you know, Prince, you guys opened up for Prince, I believe, right? Mm-hmm. How was that like to work with people who are so legendary and iconic and you guys are still, you know, building?
We were so new when the Prince thing came. I mean, we did our first show with him at the Forum in LA. But, you know, how encouraging is it, you know, as 25-year-olds or however old we were?
I didn't want to ask your age, but I was like, they like Nintendo. They like, I'm 36, so I was like, but I feel you. Okay, continue. I'm sorry.
You know, at 21 years old. No.
Is it? But you a king, is your world. Whatever you right. Whatever you say.
No, but when we walked in to to his green room. He flew us out to North Carolina after having his manager email us. And that was in that 3-week span of everything kind of going down. So from the first day released it until maybe like a 3-week mark, Prince had emailed us, or his management, and said, would you like to meet Prince? And we flew out to North Carolina where he was doing his 21 nights residency. And he had us meet him in the green room. And the first thing he says to us is, don't change a thing. Wow. And mind you, we did this for our family and friends. So, you know, we're not like, wear this or do this or, you know, look like this. Like, he was like, don't change your hair. Don't change anything about yourselves. You know what I mean? So with that said, there's this climate, I think, especially with new artists, or, you know, it's really hard to walk into the presence of an artist like that, like with Prince's caliber, are in a board meeting or a boardroom of, you know, executives from any label. And if you're not confident enough in yourself, you can be told to do anything. So it's really about, you know, that encouragement to stay yourself, you know, and I guess the blessing to have that, basically.
Yeah, that's a really cool thing to have all those people that we look up to kind of reach out to us. And it just really solidified what we're trying to do.
And it was the first like project or any kind of music you guys worked on together? Wow.
Great. So you were big Prince fans. Was it somebody that you just respected, or you were like,
I mean,
a fan
Minneapolis,
of,
like, you right, don't go anywhere without knowing that this is his hometown, right? Like, you know?
That's great. I remember I became a Prince fan because my sister, you know, I was young. She was a little bit older than me, and she just had the crush on him, the posters on the wall, Purple Rain. She would watch Purple Rain 20 times a week. Yeah. And I was the annoying little brother, so I just hated everything. I was trained to hate everything that she hated. Yeah. Man, turn this off. And then when she moved out, you know, she got old enough to move out, like, I realized, like, it just seeped in. I was like, yo, I really love her. Like, I know Purple Rain back to front. Right. Like, and, you know, it was like, amazing, but she put me on like all my favorite like rappers, like Heavy D. She was like a big Heavy D fan, big Prince fan, and so whenever I hear Prince, I always think of my sister. But that's amazing.
Yeah, I mean, he's incredible. Yeah, and he didn't know he was from Minneapolis either. Right. Like, he didn't know that up until we got to North Carolina.
He probably sensed it. Like, whatever Prince spider sense he has.
Yeah, he made fun of the high school we went to and everything. So it was really funny. Like, it's like, oh, private school. Nah.
I would have just did something to have him say, why don't you bathe in the waters of Lake Minnetonka?
He was about to go on stage, and I was like, have a good show. And he's like, you think I won't?
He's a funny dude.
Yes.
Funny dope. Guy.
Love
do you still keep in contact, or is he still there in a mentorship kind of role?
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely made himself available to us. That's if we dope. Ever needed any help or needed any advice. So
that is
amazing to have.
Right. Not that y'all need it.
Yeah, and that was really nice of him too. He heard the album, and, you know, also that was another thing he added, like, where it was like, don't change anything. This is perfect the way it is. So, you know, it's nice to also have someone like that. You know, it's really encouraging when they're not like, oh, you know, this could go or this could stay. Or, you know, he really encouraged us to be very authentic in ourselves.
Chris mentioned Mr. Chameleon. I just wanted to get into that song a little bit and figure out the theory behind that song and what it was about and where it came from. Because I went in thinking it was one thing. I was like, who is Mr. Chameleon? Like, and if somebody makes a song about me, like, I'd be upset.
We all know a Mr. or a Mrs. Chameleon, right? Like, someone that just changes on you all the time. And, you know, I think that was kind of a fun way to talk about it. We've all met those people, whether it be like romantic relationship or not, like, they're everywhere. Mm-hmm. And maybe some of us have been a chameleon every once in a while, you know? Yeah. But it was a fun way to kind of pay homage to that experience that everyone's had. You know, we had a lot of fun making it. And Amber, that was part of Amber's, you know, lyricism too. And yeah, it was actually a lot of fun to create that one.
That was a great answer. I still feel like it was about somebody. I want to know his name.
Who is it?
I want to know, like, who, like,
who you subbing?
You're not just going to subtweet all up and down.
No, I know, but that's the fun part about being in a group. Like, I mean, all the songs are really personal to us, right. but they kind of cover just the landscape of life and just right. things that everybody goes through.
Because it has to mean something to all of you guys, no yeah. matter who's contributing what mm-hmm. part of the writing.
But yeah. who came up with the idea? Like who was the one to be like, hey, or had the topic of conversation come up? Whose idea was that?
I think that one started musically, and that was Amber. Mm-hmm. She actually came up with the chords, melody, and the yeah, that was all you. Mm-hmm. You want to talk about it?
Listen, you ain't got to. If he hears it, right? You don't got to tell me who he is.
He knows who.
But if he hears it, he knows it's him.
Honestly, it's probably like more about me than it's.
Said I plead the fifth.
Right. There's probably people that hear that like she talking about herself because she did me like that.
Cold.
To be honest,
guilty.
Right. All right. Listen.
I think we're all guilty of it. So
right. I'm gonna let that slide. What's your favorite song off the pro? I feel like Anita's not really here. You the quiet one.
A little bit.
Yeah. We're going to get into your business. What's your favorite song off the album?
I listen to Red Eye often.
Okay.
Yeah.
What is it about Red Eye that?
It's, I think that's one of the tracks on the album that really captures like that old school type of feel. You can really hear like the old school R&B inspiration behind right. that track. And then even just the lyrics, like you just have to hear it. I can try to explain it, but I don't want to give you like the wrong idea.
There's only the right idea. No such thing as wrong answers. Mm-hmm. And the live show. So now you've worked on this for years and you get to take it on the road. Mm. What's the live show like? What's that going to be?
It's fun. We have a lot of fun up on stage.
It's a good time.
It's a party.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's the three of us. We like to party. We like when people are standing up and dancing with us.
Mm.
And, you know, it's really cool because we've done a few of these songs before the album was out and mm-hmm. people were hearing the live versions as the first time hearing the song.
Mm-hmm.
But now that they have the album, it'll be really fun, I think, for them to hear the arrangements and to know that their arrangements and like where the song started and then what we did to change them for the live setting. Mm.
Do you feel like the live show compared to the album is like two totally different experiences?
I don't think it's two totally different experiences. I think that it's just kind of like little musical treats for people who have fallen in love with the music. And I think that what we try to present live is just being fully immersed in the sound, just kind of all around you, like diving into it and going even deeper into the album.
Super dope. You mentioned something. You said you like to see people dancing in the crowd. Do you experience that often? Because I feel like so many times that I go to shows, and especially in New York, being in New York, and people just too cool and stand around and watch mm-hmm. you. Then I watch like old like movies and things like a sock hop or something like that. And right. somebody will be like performing, and people will be dancing. I'm just like, right. when can we get back to this?
Mm-hmm. We had the most incredible yeah. concert experience ever here in Brooklyn.
Okay,
it was the Mokata. It was the art festival. Mm-hmm. We were playing in Brooklyn at Von King Park, and we were just playing, and we saw all these people who were, you know, all strangers to each other. They all like started holding hands and they formed this like huge dance line, and it was like the most incredible emotional, like I was on stage like wanting to be off stage, like,
right,
it was almost overwhelming just to see how much love is in the audience when we play anywhere. But it was just so tangible then that people actually like had to act out on it.
And what song were you playing when this happened?
The entire concert.
Wow.
Yeah. See, we need more of that.
Y'all got something special. I'm just sitting here like, I
gotta see you guys live because
it just all feels so overwhelming and such. I think we're all just so humbled at the fact that all these people feel like family to us. You mm-hmm. all feel like family to us.
Wow,
you
don't
know anything about us. You know, it's just nothing but a blessing, like mm-hmm. truly.
What does your family say now? Because, okay, so we go back to the original part of the story, and the story, the EP, they just made it for their friends and family and put mm-hmm. it on iTunes. What does the family say now?
Oh, they're happy.
Yeah, they're so proud.
My mom
yeah.
walks around with her iPhone just playing it without me. Right. At the salon, just like,
I know. She got to be like, yo, pass the aux cord.
Yeah, right?
King got something to say. Andre 3000 voice.
Yeah, they're really proud.
I did want to ask you guys, Robert Glasspen, right?
Mm-hmm.
Move Love, the song. How did that come about? Because he is like, when we talk about a musician, like jazz musician at that, that's like up there. He's amazing. And his live shows as well are just insane. So how did that get put together?
He was in LA recording that album and we were in LA. I've met him a few times throughout the years. I think when I was at college and kind of following after that. But he had just heard the EP and he invited us to be a part of the creation of the album, which is really cool. They had like blocked out a studio and did like a whole studio session. But for our song, he came to our house and actually did a load of laundry. He kicked it for a while.
What?
Yeah.
Did he bring his own detergent? He just came in your house with laundry?
That was awesome. Because that same day, he brought over. That was like, what, 2011
still? Yeah. And he brought over some pretty incredible people. He brought that same day. He was just like, oh, I have someone coming over. And it was Mos Def. And they're just like, oh, my God.
Lupe Fiasco as well.
Nah. Lupe? Hold up. You got Lupe in your home studio?
Yeah. That was pretty insane.
That's amazing. You should have put on Street Fighter or something and be like, oh, nah. Yeah. That's cool. Man, I remember, like, when you just talk about kind of, I think what people saw in you early on, people like Prince, just the star in you guys. I remember I used to go see Mos Def at open mics like before.
Wow.
Like you pay like $5 and you had to like put your name in a hat and they pick your name out and you do it open and Mos Def, and from then he just had such a command on, like we were like in poet cafes and the New York Poet Cafe and LES, and it was just amazing, and I wouldn't trade that for nothing. I'm like, man, I got to see Mos Def and it'd be like 60 people in the crowd or something like that. Like, yeah, he could do The Garden and those shows will always probably be the most like special to me.
They're more intimate, I think.
I think too, you know, with, you know, we talked about today in the climate of society and entertainment and how almost disposable art is, but especially black art, to where you see all these things really come into life, like these terms and slang and all of this, and just come from kids in middle school.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Like to be a black woman and to have people acknowledge what you're doing.
Right. Well, you know, listen, all of popular culture, I feel like, listen, or fashion, music trends, slang, I mean, just all comes from black culture. It just fuels America and then the world beyond. Like, I mean, we're about to get ready to go into the Super Bowl and, you know, Cam Newton is amazing at what he's doing. But, you know, all most people could talk about is the dab. It's like, all right.
Right.
Like,
yeah.
And right. Like, he dabbed, but he just threw 7 touchdowns. Right. Like, why? Right. Why is the dab the thing?
Right.
You know, and down to fashion, I remember one time, my wife was watching Sex in the City, and I just so happened to walk in the room because I don't like but I saw it.
Be honest, we're Sex in the City fans.
I watched Sex in the City. Yo, man, like, what was that dude's name? It was Biggs was the other one. But Adrian Alton? Or Aiden?
Yeah.
I thought she did him so dirty. He's such a nice dude.
Wait, the geeky guy?
He was a furniture designer.
Yeah, he was like the carpenter. He was like Jesus.
Exactly.
But and I saw like, I think it was like Carrie or something like that, and they were in like nameplate belts. And I was just like,
necklace and hoop earrings and
where'd this come from?
Yeah.
Like, you know, so I think you're right. I think often a lot of times with black culture and the contributions to, again, music, fashion, it becomes trendy, and then, you know, once mainstream America is done with it, they throw it away. But we're all so inventive that it's always just on to the next.
Yeah.
You know? But I think you're right. I think there's a disposable nature to the art that we create. But, you know, it takes, I think, artists like yourselves to help change the course of that. Because, you know, there's reasons why Bob Marley, at this point, what are we, 30, maybe almost 40 years later, like that music still resonates, like why Marvin Gaye still resonates, why we're still talking about Nas's Illmatic, you know, Prince. So, you know, just be a part of that legacy. You could be fast food or you could be, you know,
I like that.
The real deal.
Yeah. Which is why I think we're still here talking about, like, I listened to, you know, Story EP. I like how you guys actually incorporated the same three songs, but like extended versions in the new album. But it's like, that's just a perfect example, like something that came out a couple years ago and it's only three songs. You could still talk about it till today, you know, and you incorporated it in the new album. That album's going to resonate for a while. And it's timeless music. Like me and Rob, you know, we talk about this a lot. We like to have, you know, conversations with the artists on this show about the process of making their music and why they make the music they make and what's the message behind it. Because, you know, the songs you guys are making, it's going to last more than just a month or two until people are on to the next artist, you know? So I appreciate you guys and everything you guys are doing.
Thank you.
And for everybody listening, go listen to the album. Yeah. It is
amazing. Do you have any favorites?
Yeah, I heard it. Like I've just been like getting into it because it's like the NPR stream, which is great. Yeah. Shout out to NPR. But I need to like have it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, and not just log on in the browser. So no, I've definitely been listening. I love The Greatest just because of the video.
Mm.
Like, I think it really drawn me in. So even when I listen to the song now, like I see the visual. And I still really love Hey. And it was like one of the first things I ever heard. And then obviously there's the familiarity with Kendrick Lamar. Yeah. And Red Eye, I like a lot also.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So, just like, yeah.
But I'm still like absorbing it. And sometimes it just takes a while to digest it, especially the music that you guys make. Like, it's just not, you got to absorb, you got to sit with it and let it sing in.
I feel like you also kind of get lost in it. Like, I don't know if that's just me, but I was listening and I feel like it, I don't know, it's so soothing and like mellow and kind of like relaxing, kind of takes you into like a different zone. And then I have to like, wait a minute, what did I just listen to? Go back, hear it again. I think Native Land is the closing song, and Native Land really had me like in that zone. And I'm like, wait a minute, I got to rewind this and play it again. So I do have to sit with the album again, but Native Land in the meantime I also love. Gotta listen more.
And it's out February 5th.
Mm-hmm.
Officially
Friday.
Okay, where is that, where can they get it? February 5th.
iTunes, Amazon. You can go to weareking.com and find all the outlets.
Great.
We'll be having some limited edition physical copies of
Need
the CD
that.
Yeah,
isn't it what happened to the physical? I was just speaking, I was with Wiz Khalifa. I interviewed him for Genius. So Wiz is a longtime friend of mine, and we had just were talking about like, what's up with physical copies? Like, literally, like he's talking about my son. I'm talking about his. He was like, "Yo, our kids won't know what a physical know what it's like to read." And I'm like, "Nah, bro, fuck that."
Right.
We gonna get them the illest record collection. Like they might have to open a museum when they grow up.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I mean, they aren't even putting like disk drives in computers anymore.
Yeah. Well, listen, a shout to Apple. I everything I have is Apple.
Right.
But you know, it's a little suspicious when it's like Apple runs iTunes and the number one place where you download MP3s from. Plus now they're in the streaming game, and it's like I can't even put a CD in the computer.
I got an Air some years ago and got home like, wait a minute. Like, you know that scene in Zoolander where they're like tapping the computer, like, what? Like, that was me for about an hour straight.
That was a great comparison.
It's crazy. But I don't think it'll ever die. I think, you know, it might lessen, but you know, you're doing limited edition physical copies.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going to serve a base. I think people are going to snatch those up right away. I'm finna get me one.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because I need that. One thing I wanted to do, which was fun, real quick before we get out of here, like I'm a Twitter junkie. And a couple of weeks ago, I think Chris remembers this, that I just started having a conversation on Twitter. I started talking about the first song I ever slow danced to. And then everybody was like, oh, my first song was this. And it just became like this cool conversation. And who talks about slow dancing? It made the Twitter moments. They made its own Twitter moment thing. It was like
it
crazy.
It becomes a very hot topic on Twitter.
So I just wanted to go down the line and just ask y'all the first song y'all ever slow danced to.
She's really thinking here.
Yeah, I'm thinking hard. I feel like it was Mariah Carey, like Always Be My Baby or something. Like the roller gardens, like roller skating. I remember the one that had the biggest crush. I can't even say it. But
you shout him out.
Nah, no, thank you.
Nah. She said no thanks.
Come out. You ever see Beyonce's first boyfriend, the one that Beyonce went to the prom with?
Oh yeah, they
They did. His picture came up like years later. Right. Shout to that guy.
And he didn't even know, I think, right?
Yeah, I think he did her dirty too. I think that was like the thing or whatever. But Mariah Carey, always be my baby.
That's
With
Who was I dancing with?
Yeah.
I mean, it was
Jonathan.
Skating.
I don't know. You saw his name. Clay.
That's the best, though. That's actually really.
Yeah.
Yeah. Skating.
I mean, it adds an extra element of, like, you might fall and bust your ass.
Yeah. Your crush will pick you up, so it's all good.
I feel like ATL was your favorite movie coming up.
Yeah, right?
Oh, my gosh. I'm such a bad.
Rashad. His name was Rashad, wasn't it?
Sure. I thought I could skate. You know, I was rollerblading back in the day, but we just went to this boiler room party. They had it a skating rink, and they just had skates.
That's dope.
Did you skate?
It was like free drinks. I was like, oh, yeah, oh, turn right.
Oh, no. Nice.
Skate and alcohol.
Yeah, I decided I was going to stay at the open bar.
You got to do it for the Snapchat or something. You got to give them some.
She's like, you'll be fine. Like, just come on. I was like the first person out there, the first person to bust my ass in front of everybody. Like, hey. And it was boiler room, so there's cameras everywhere.
Like, sugar free DJ Quay.
Right. I ain't going to lie. I was at a Troy Ave. Video shoot.
Oh,
he shot one in the roller skating rink. It was for
what was the song? Your Style?
Your Style. And I bust my ass. And
did
I was
you?
Like, and
nobody
I was like,
got
yo,
that?
Don't use, yo. B. Cut. Don't put that out there. This footage there, but you ain't use it. The homie held me down. Shout out to Troy Ave. Shout out to Hovain. Anita, your first dance. You had time to think about it.
Oh, jeez. I did think about it, and I'm actually kind of embarrassed to say that it was probably Hey, because I was a late bloomer, so
Hey. You dancing your own song?
Yeah, I did. It was corny. Ooh. But it was
I'm like, hey y'all, I'm like, what? Hey, what's Hey? Your Hey.
Yeah.
Dance to your own music?
You
were on a date?
No, it came on the radio. So it was like, song's on the radio.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's sweet.
So it had a little slow dance.
It's a nice memory for the song.
Yeah.
I'm going to ask you, it might be weird, like, what else do you do to your own music? I just want to know.
She'll write a song about it.
Yeah. First song you dance to, Emma?
Honest to God, I don't know if I've ever slow danced.
No, you're one of those.
If I could, I'd drop this mic.
Yeah.
I'm being honest. Look,
I
trust y'all.
I love your honesty. And I'm not going to judge you.
I was honest too, see?
Yeah, I'm not going to
I think
judge
it went from like
right
the nice hot, you know, I'm saying hot skates because that's the place by my house, right. But the skating date, Mariah Carey, to... Oh, hey. Shit, my song's on the radio.
Right.
Shut up and listen.
Hey, I'm Amber. I'm an Aries.
And you ain't never had a slow dance? Child.
So
we're gonna throw some on. Can we throw some on right now? Let's make a what we gonna do?
I'm like one of those people that's like, I'm not doing that. Like, that's
not gonna slow
corny.
Down. You're not gonna right? Why not?
Wait, so no, it's by the end of 2016, you have to have your first slow dance. That's the mission. Corny or not, you guys are in charge of making sure that she has her first slow dance this year.
Look, they could pass the Oscar. We could throw something on right now. Listen.
We might just have, you know what? We might just have to do,
I don't know,
LA in March, Mario Kart slow dances.
Right. Okay.
I'm building this up. Right. We're going to make a thing out of this.
I don't know what to do.
We're going
to
get you.
Slow dances, throws up on his feet.
What did you say? Oh, shit.
Siri interrupted me.
She said, stop, Kristen. Before we get out of Chris, what's the first song you slow dance to? Did we talk about that? I feel like you wasn't on Twitter that night. You wasn't there, right? Did you wait?
I might have just been lurking.
Oh. Oh, we ain't even speak about the Rihanna album. We speak about that later.
Ooh, fire.
Yeah.
Yep.
Did you think that, okay.
Yep.
Wait, what'd you say your sign was?
Aries.
Aries. What month is that?
April.
Oh, your birthday's coming up.
I like the first joint with SZA.
Yeah.
Amazing. SZA is so...
And I like, yeah, I said it.
Yeah.
Rihanna talking that talk.
Yeah.
But I have feelings about that
album.
I love
Rihanna.
What's the Monte Carlo song? Desperado?
Oh, yeah,
Desperado. Desperado, I like.
What's the song you slow dance to? Let's go.
I was kind of trying to change the subject.
Yeah. Benita said it, and she was really, Anita's a shy one, and she was really embarrassed.
I've definitely had like my slow dance, and when I was, I think my first slow dance was probably like the fifth, when I was in the fifth grade. It was my first year living in Long Island, and actually, I still keep in touch with him. Shout out to Carter. So that was my first slow dance.
What was the song?
But I don't remember the song. I might have to hit him up and ask him.
He remembers.
He probably won't remember. Nah.
So men. Slow dancing is like a
big deal. You know what? I don't think it is. But for me, it's like, again, I'm a little bit older. I'm 36. Like, I don't know. It's just something that you always remember. Like, I always remember going to the party. And I grew up in Flatbush, Brooklyn, like big West Indian community. So, you know, a lot of reggae, a lot of dance hall, you know, a lot of rubbing, some dubs and all of that. But then you waited for the night, and hip hop too, and then you waited for the night when they threw on that one slow. And by the night, I mean, we were like 10, 11 years old. So you wait till like 8:30, 9 o'clock when they slowed it down. Aww. And I feel like in clubs and parties, this doesn't go on anymore. And so, like, I'm not shocked that you've never slow danced. Like, I think it's probably more common. Plus, who's really recording slow jams anymore like that? Yeah. Like, it's not.
I'm not a dancer.
I just don't think I don't think it's a thing anymore. Like, I remember.
It was a thing. I'm trying to bring that back. I'm trying to bring slow dancing back. What if we do a party? I really want to throw this for the listeners. I want to do a red light special party that is just slow jams. Like, you got to come with a date.
That's the number one thing.
Aww. You know, guy or girl, whatever, like, but come with a date. You have to come with somebody. So everybody has somebody. And it don't got to be super serious, but like, I'm going to do like the Step in the Name of Love video or something like that. But like all
my
night.
My favorite.
You know what I mean? And it don't got to be nasty. We ain't talking about getting freaky.
Will you guys come? Will you have your first slow dance in our
club? I love that.
We should do that. We got to set that up.
My first slow dance, I say it though, right? Is,
have you said it?
Sixth grade dance. Mint Condition.
Oh, wow.
Pretty Brown Eyes.
Breaking My Heart, Pretty Brown Eyes was my first slow dance.
Yeah. Probably my favorite song from them, too.
That's dope.
Love Mint Condition.
Yeah,
Mint Condition is...
They're amazing.
Yeah, so... But we're here now. And King, and we are King. I'm going to let you ladies go because I know you just got into town. I know the homie Greg Miller lined up a ton of interviews, and I promise I will read them and listen to them all because I'm really fascinated and a fan of what you're doing. Plug time, whatever you want to plug. You want to plug your Twitter, your social media, the album one more time, whatever you want to do, we could do it.
You can find us online at We Are King on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Our website is weareking.com. You can find the album on our website. It's coming out Friday, February 5th. It is called We Are King. And we are Paris, Amber, and Anita. Thank you guys so much for having us.
Thank you guys for coming.
You guys thank are you so amazing. Much. They just got off the flight. They just got in.
From You're the just West in? Coast.
And wow. Their first stop was the Red Light Special.
I feel special.
That's right. And we're here. So until next week, I don't know how we're going to top this. I'm going to go back. I'm going to listen. I'm going to go slow dance. Nice. With the wife.
Oh. I want to make sure all the listeners too, like, I think one of the best things about doing this is it's like, I feel like it's like a cult that we have like behind us. Like, there aren't R&B podcasts out there, and every time that we kind of like you know, introduce a new artist or somebody that's coming out with something new, the people really like grab onto it. So everybody listening, go grab the album and tweet us. Let us know what you think. You know, we'll have Rob open up another Twitter conversation because you're good at that.
Yeah, I talk a lot. Yeah. All right, but we're here. We Are King. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
This has been the Red Light Special. We're going to take you out as we always do with the homies Jake and Papa. This is Starless. Till next week. Peace. That's the